Thank you, Steve. Well, a new era is beginning, Wendy. We're in our new location, the new studios for WGN Radio. Very high up. Very high up.
That's because I'm standing.
You are standing. I haven't seen you stand in years and years during a show.
Because we weren't able to.
It would have been uncomfortable.
If I need to punch you, I can.
Yeah, feel
free. Hands are free.
I'm going to keep my guard up just in case you throw me a jab or two.
You know, as a listener saying, it doesn't sound any different, I don't think.
Probably not, no.
So,
but it'll take us maybe 3 years, 4 years to get used to this because we were so used to things being the way they were over there. And now everything's just a little bit different.
What's there to get used to?
Altitude. We're very high up.
I know, seriously. I liked being on floor one in case of an emergency.
Right.
I could just abandon ship and run out.
Right. So in the old place, people would walk by all through the show and wave at us or...
And didn't you like that?
I enjoyed that. Now when people walk by, I get scared. I'm like, how tall is this guy?
I see dead people. They're floating by.
People are just floating past us.
You can wave to the people in the condos across the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We got to keep an eye on those people.
Yeah. Someone's in the shower.
Oh, boy.
How about that?
You actually tried to look. Good
I
for
did
you.
Try to see. Just want to see who it was. A quick welcome back to our friend Steve Bertrand, who has spent the past week in Europe as part of Bertrand Travel. Welcome back, Steve.
Thank you very much. It was a great trip. We went to Denmark and Norway. I think the Norway, riding around the fjords and the fast boats there. I think it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Is that right?
Around the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you've been to many places.
Yep. Had a great crowd this time. And the cool thing about these trips is everyone comes back, you know, friends, making new friends. And a wonderful time.
Very, very nice.
So you should go with Dave Hoekstra to Ireland, Wendy.
You know what? I really think I should. I'm proud of Dave Hoekstra because he went to see Stormy Daniels to get a picture.
Wait, don't.
Oh my God, it's
down.
All over Facebook.
Let me soak that in just a little bit. Because why? Because
he covers, you know, his Nocturnal Journal. He covers everything that's important
things
in the city.
Things that go bump in the night.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it's bands. Sometimes it's a stripper.
So he got to meet her?
There's a picture. They look like a lovely little couple, actually.
I know they put a down payment on a place in Payless. Good for them. They're in love.
The Dave Hoekstra trip really sounds pretty splendid because you're getting to see Van Morrison in the town in which he grew up. Is that it, Bertrand?
Yeah, Belfast. He does a few shows every year in a hotel in Belfast. I think it's the Europa this year, and it's like 350 people. So it's like going to a wedding, and he's the wedding entertainment.
So seeing him anywhere would be amazing because he's Van Morrison. But seeing him there in his natural habitat, you can't beat that.
Dave Hoekstra and his new wife, Stormy, will go celebrate and have the reception.
And, you wouldn't that be nice?
This trip isn't just that, too. You're in Dublin, and you're in Derry, and Donegal, and all over the place, too. So you see a lot of Ireland.
That's a great trip, too.
All right, I'll put you down for, what, two or four?
Yeah, put us down for four.
Okay.
All right.
That
was quick. You're not going to go?
When is it?
What kind of a team player are you?
September 30th.
What do you got that day? You don't have anything planned.
I have to get the kids to school.
Oh, all right.
Actually, it's a Saturday.
Oh, you're just going for one day?
Well,
that's
we'll
a quick turnaround.
They pack a lot in.
All
Bertrand Travel packs a lot in.
SteveBertrandTravel.com.
Well, we're glad to have you back, Steve. You were greatly missed.
And your plugs were missed, too.
I didn't notice that one.
We still gave some. We still gave you a couple.
No, but it was a great time. Really great. And we had really good weather, so I got up close to a couple of glaciers. Saw an orca. Whale.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just the tail.
It wasn't, still, you know, though.
It wasn't like your postcard jump or anything like that, but
yeah
it just was a great time.
Oh,
Copenhagen,
that's so nice.
Was great.
What exactly is a fjord?
Steve?
A fjord is a long, narrow ocean inlet that is sided by cliffs, high cliffs. That's my understanding of it. So we were like, you know, in Norway, the fjords go in 100 miles or so.
The fjords go in, the fjords go out.
Wendy has more questions. What is an isthmus? She has a lot of geography.
And was it a merry one?
Merry isthmus to you and yours, Wendy.
Wendy, we found this neighborhood in Copenhagen called Christiania, and it's sort of a hippie enclave now.
I saw pictures on Facebook. Was there weed just growing on the sidewalks and stuff?
Yes, there was marijuana growing on the sidewalks. We went into this one street, and at the top of the street it said no pictures of people. And we didn't really know what it was, and we walked down, and it was all these guys with card tables selling drugs.
Oh, wow. But the sign specifically said, Steve, no pictures of people. Like, you could photograph other things. It was just people they wanted to avoid.
Well, yeah, I think so. So I went in and I wanted to take a picture of one of the tables. And I asked one of the dealers, I'm like, can I? And he wouldn't let me do it. He took my camera and took it for me.
Oh, wow.
And my son Noah didn't see the sign and was taking pictures of the street. And he got squirted with like a high-powered water gun, like, to stop him.
Liquid PCP. Yeah. That's what he was squirted with.
Because it's not legally sold there, even though everyone knows they do it.
So it isn't legal, but no one's coming
by. They look
by
the other way.
Busting them?
They say the Danes sort of live and let live, and so they don't bother them very much. But when we would leave the neighborhood, there's a sign saying, you are now re-entering the EU for the European Union, as if you were out of it for a while.
Oh.
But yeah, that was a very cool little side trip.
Wow, interesting.
Not for everyone.
And you mean side trip.
Yeah, I do, exactly.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's all kinds of new show coming your way. It's Bill and It's Wendy on WGN.
First time I'm hitting the button here on this
exciting.
New board. You
very
ready?
Exciting, yeah. That was excellent.
Thank you.
That's it, Jazz. Music.
Play some music. Put another dime in the jukebox.
We're still having some technical
problems. I'm not here.
There we go.
There it is.
Drummer was sleeping.
Now
the
it's official. Now it's official. All right. Can I throw a from time to time, because the English language is constantly changing, Wendy.
Yes.
There will be a word or a phrase that I'll hear, and I won't know it, but I'll say to myself, well, maybe I'm just out of the loop. I bet other people know what this is. If I told you that you can watch guys boasting, what would that mean? There's two guys, and they're boasting. You can watch them boast. What would that mean?
Boy, I had some smart-ass answers that I just
there's
edited.
There's no place for that. This is no place
they're
for that.
They're boasting?
Yeah, two guys, or it could be a guy and a girl, or it could be two girls. But I would say to you, hey, it's 7 o'clock. There's going to be two people boasting. We should go watch that. What would that mean?
Well, toasting is what they do in Jamaica when they rap and go back and forth, and it's...
You're not that far off. You're in the neighborhood. I would almost want to give it to you, but not quite.
Or roasting. I can't remember what the Jamaicans
call. You're very, very close.
It's when you talk to one another back and forth and musically, right?
Not really. All right, so here's what it is. They started this thing a couple of years ago, and it happens mostly in New York clubs, but it happens in other places too. Where people go up and they rip each other or roast each other, you know, like on Comedy Central when they have a roast. So let's say you and I were roasting each other.
Which we do almost every day.
We do that every day. So I would get up and I'd say some horrible things about you and you'd go, oh yeah? And then you'd say some horrible things about me. Well, because the climate politically is so tense right now, somebody said a couple months ago, enough of the mean. I think people have been mean enough. So now if you're boasting, you go up and it's a competition where two people have to say nicer things about the other person.
See,
than
that
they
would
say
be easier for me to say nice things about. Yeah. I don't like to focus my energy on mean unless I'm mad.
Yeah. I get that.
Well, I've changed in a week.
You're the one I'm mad at every day. So
that's what was missing without Steve, is that element.
But
that
I mean,
was missing.
Seriously, I mean, I don't like to be mean. I really don't.
Right. It just comes naturally.
No.
It's just in you.
We're not supposed to be boasting. We're supposed to be saying nice things about each other. I compliment you all the time.
Yes.
And you're all uncomfortably like, oh, yeah, thank you.
When was the last time you complimented? What was the last compliment?
I said he was one of the quickest people, the quickest minds I've ever worked with. That was last week or two. I say that frequently.
Okay, name everyone else. We'll see if it's a compliment.
What?
The guys from Dumb and Dumber. Well, thank you. That's very nice.
See, isn't it more uncomfortable when you hear... Like, I don't like when you're nice to me. When we had to put our dog Tiki down, you were so nice to me, and it made me uncomfortable, because I'm not used to you being, like, that sensitive guy to
me. But I knew that you were going through a horrible time,
so I... It made me uncomfortable.
Oh.
I'm so used to people picking on me that when they're nice, I'm like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, right.
It's just weird.
But above and beyond all that, I could see where a crowd would gather in a club setting to see two people being mean to each other. I could see that, but I listened to this thing where they had audio of it, and they were just saying great things about each other.
That's not fun.
Who wants to see this? I didn't want to see it.
That baseball cap fits you better than the other one that looked like you were wearing a toddler cap. Yeah, something like that. That's nice.
Well, no, because you still got a dig in. You still,
that's how I roll.
You still found a way to subtly get a dig in. But, you know, you spend all that money to go to a club, and then you just see people go, oh, you look nice, you smell nice, what a great future you have in front of you. I can't see that catching on, can you?
No, it would be very quick. Then the next people would come up and say almost the same thing.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's too repetitious. Because even when something is nice, there's got to be a limit to it. You go, oh, all right, we've seen that. Get back.
If I wanted some syrup, I'd have some pancakes right now. Because I'm like that. If something is too sticky, syrupy,
right.
Sweet, it's like,
yeah.
What do I do with this information?
I don't think this is going to catch on.
I don't either.
I think this is for the moment, but quickly catch it, because it's not going to be here much longer.
Well, here's the time for you to boast. Did you have a good Father's Day?
I had honestly one of the best Father's Day ever. It was so nice. It was. So,
He's boasting right now.
Well, yeah. It was just...
What'd you do that was different?
It started out, I already told you this, but one of my daughters lives in New York, one lives in Chicago, and we don't get to see Kylie much because she lives in New York. And my wife totally blew the surprise the day before.
Why are you putting that on the air? She feels so bad about it.
You know, she doesn't feel that bad. Like, I would feel
really?
Awful. Yeah, she thinks it's amusing, and it is kind of amusing. But when we were selecting a restaurant, she picked one, and she goes, oh, that one. And at this point, I didn't know Kylie was coming in. She goes, we should go to that one. Reese loves it. Kylie loves it. And I go, well, what difference does it make if Kylie loves it? She's in New York. And then she got that look on her face.
Uh-oh.
And then, like, to make matters worse, she kept giving me reasons why.
She was overcompensating.
Oh, Kylie couldn't possibly fly in. She's got all kinds of stuff going on this weekend in New York. There's no way. Like, the more she said, the more I went, okay.
And there's that Republic airstrike.
Right. She can't possibly fly in with that going on. But it was just, you know, they gave me this gift basket that was two of everything I love.
Because you have twins.
You know, I didn't even put that together.
Oh, my God.
I just thought because if it was one of everything I love, that's no big deal. And if it was more, it would have cost thousands of dollars. But it was just, it was like...
There are two of them. Boy, that went missed and no one explained it to you?
No. I'm not positive that's why.
All right.
I just think the basket was large enough to accommodate two of everything.
We're going to have to get more, you guys.
But it was just great. And then a nice dinner out with, you know, my wife and both of my daughters. And it was fantastic. What about on your end? You guys had a good time?
Yeah, we had the boys actually purchased a Father's Day gift on their own for Jim in advance. It was some Star Wars book that, believe it or not, he didn't have.
That's hard to believe.
I know. And then I combined his lack of birthday present, Christmas present, and anniversary present, and combined it with Father's Day, and we got him an iPad because he's wanting to read comic books
on the iPad.
Yeah, because he's been doing it on his laptop and it takes too much room in our bed.
Yeah.
So we got him that, and then we did our favorite Red Lobster like at 8 o'clock
for
last
the seafood
night.
Lover in
yes.
You.
And we love Red Lobster.
Is Red Lobster crowded on Father's Day or not crowded?
Yeah, I actually downloaded the app so I could be on a wait list because they don't take reservations.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out very well because I signed up, I put myself on a wait list, and then when I arrived, they couldn't find my name on the wait list. So we waited about 40 minutes.
But worth it?
Yeah, and the
you
kids...
You waited 40 minutes at Red Lobster?
It was Father's Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean... It's reasonably priced. It's
really
good.
Can I
throw
a boast at you?
Yeah.
Just to see if this still works. You have the delicious aroma of Cheddar Bay biscuits.
That's
wow.
Not a boast.
I think it is.
I think I would pay to see that.
Yeah.
And
sure.
So, I mean, it's so fun because the kids really think we're on vacation when you go out to eat at night.
They do?
Yeah, it just feels like you're on vacation when you eat at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And again, we didn't think it would be that crowded at that point.
Yeah.
We were wrong.
It was, though.
Steve, what did you do for your Father's Day?
I flew home. So we were on the trip, so we flew home.
But you were with your kids, so that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, I spent more time with my kids yesterday than I have on any other Father's Day. They
but
hated it.
But that's not bad, is it? That's please tell me that's not bad.
Here, give me the bag. Got to go to the bathroom. Got to do this.
Uh-oh.
No, it was great. We had a great time.
Well, happy Father's Day to all the fathers
successful
listening.
All around.
Can I say, though, as a dad, I'm one of those guys who I like to fly, sit on the window, and then point out everything to everyone else.
Yeah.
And, of course, they can't see it because I'm on the window.
Right.
So we flew over Greenland, and you could see icebergs and things like that.
Oh.
That's cool.
It was very cool.
I would have looked,
yeah.
Steve.
Thank you.
And, Steve, they taught us this in history class 1,000 years ago, but you lived it, so you tell me. Is it true that Greenland, despite the name, is really snowy and icy, but yeah. Iceland, despite the name, is really warm and wonderful and inviting?
Well, it's warmer than Greenland. Greenland is, yeah, almost all ice and
but
snow.
But they named it that to confuse people, like warring factions that might come in, right? Is that why it was named like that?
That's the legend that one of the Vikings did that, named it to in order to
Grant Tarkenton.
Protect it.
Was no, he on
I
your
think
trip?
It was Alan Page.
Alan Page.
Right.
Excellent. All right, we must take a break.
Yes.
Stick around. We must. Wendy, we must. All right, we'll take a quick break and then some news and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Effen and it's Wendy Snyder. From time to time, we bring in our friend Rich Lankoff, attorney at law over at Bryce Downey and Lankoff LLC.
Attorney at law.
It sounds official, doesn't it?
Yes.
Rich, it sounds very official.
You have to add the Esquire to make it really sound
Esquire.
Cool.
Esquire. All right, so legally there's much going on that we want to discuss with you. If you wouldn't mind, I'd love to start with the Paul Manafort story. Is that good?
Yeah, Paul Manafort is in jail as we speak in Northern Virginia. A judge last week revoked his bail. He is awaiting trial, as you know, a couple of different trials, actually, for some of his business dealings, not to do with the Mueller probe on its face, but many people have connected that. And in fact, many people say that what Mueller is doing and what these trials are all about is trying to squeeze him to gain some leverage and maybe gain some admission so he'll cooperate.
They want to flip
in
him.
The Russia probe. Correct. So, you know, this is about his business dealings. The judge last week revoked his bail because she said that there's a real risk of him tampering with witnesses, tampering with evidence. There's some evidence that he already has tried to do so, that he's tried to contact some witnesses in the underlying case, which, as you probably know, is not great. It's
right.
not a good thing to do.
I didn't know that was illegal. I'm sorry. I don't have a very good handle on the law.
Yeah, tampering with witnesses, contacting witnesses is generally frowned upon in trial. So the judge said, you know, this is not grade school. I can't take away your phone. So she did the next best thing and put him in jail. Until now, he was at home under house arrest.
When you tamper with a witness, what is the procedure exactly? What would go on in a situation where you might tamper with a witness?
Well, you would, you know, the accusation in this case was that he was contacting witnesses that would provide evidence in his trial and try to influence them.
Yeah.
There was some evidence that he was going through lobbying firms and trying to discredit some of the witnesses and discuss what they knew about his dealings with Russian envoys in particular. And you just can't have that. Obviously, as you're preparing for trial, you can't have defendants talking to potential witnesses because there's the potential that they will try to alter their testimony and tamper with evidence.
Mm-hmm. Is that typically a jail sentence or is that something that a fine would normally be imposed?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Typically, you don't jail someone for this, but, you know, because of the notoriety of this case and because who Manafort is and because of the resources at his disposal. Remember, this is someone who would spend, you know, $8,000 on a suit. The judge felt that this was an extraordinary circumstance that warranted revoking his bail. He was out on $10 million bail.
Well, you only pay 10% of that, so that becomes an affordable, only $1 million bargain price.
Exactly. But, you know, the judge felt that this was an extreme situation that warranted putting him away until trial.
Yeah.
Now, can Donald Trump just pardon him if something goes awry and he's found guilty?
So that's, you know, the question that lots of folks have been discussing.
Because he's been pardoning up a storm, and do we know about Rod Blagojevich yet?
Yeah, we don't know yet.
I will feel so bad for Rod Blagojevich if after this has been brought up, all of a sudden Donald Trump says, nah, you know what? I rethought this one.
Yeah, on Friday on Legal Face Off on our podcast on WGN, we had his brother,
Rob,
on the show, and we asked him that question. You know, how devastating would it be to the family if you got their hopes up so high and President Trump did not commute their sentence? As is well known, he's not on good terms with the family, but he said, obviously, what we all know, that would be incredibly difficult. Back to your question about pardons, you know, lots of people have felt that Trump is sending out a signal to people who might testify in the Mueller probe and in these other trials that we will pardon you later on. So, you know,
stay
it's okay.
Stay with the program.
Absolutely. And just over the weekend, Giuliani, his private attorney, said that he didn't rule out a pardon. And, you know, legally, nor should he. I mean, the reality is that the Constitution provides Trump basically an unfettered opportunity to pardon people except for cases of impeachment. Everything else, he has the right to pardon. So when you ask Giuliani or Trump, will you rule out a pardon? The answer should be no, because that's what pardons are for. You might not like the fact that Manafort ultimately might be pardoned, but that is in reality completely within the purview of the president.
Go back just a little bit with the idea of him flipping, of Paul Manafort flipping. Is he, in your opinion, the most flippable character in this scenario?
No question, because he faces the greatest liability. He faces the most counts, and he faces the most jail time. You know, it's easy to be loyal to the president when you're sitting in your house and driving a Accord and Range Rovers. Right now, he's in jail. He's in, you know, a jail cell in a federal jail in Virginia. Yeah. I guarantee you he's now a lot less comfortable than he was.
Yeah.
And the idea of cooperating with Mueller in exchange for immunity or exchange for some other deal is a lot more attractive now that he's, you know, facing three square meals a day and he's in with the general population.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and then more discussion with Rich Lankoff. If you have any questions or comments, it's the same phone number, right?
I was just going to ask you that, but
I
yes,
312-981-7200. All right, give us a call or a text. We'll be back in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
A whole lot of law. That's what we got with Rich Lankoff right now, partner at Bryce Downey and Lankoff. He's our show attorney. And it's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder. Rich, what did we want to talk about next? This James Comey thing?
Yeah, I mean, James Comey is obviously in the news. Last week, the Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz released a report finally about the Hillary Clinton email investigation. That person and FBI Director Christopher Wray are testifying today before Congress about the contents of that report. The bottom line is the report determined that James Comey, the ex-FBI director, acted inappropriately in his communications with the media surrounding his findings. If you recall, before the election.
How many days? Like 6 days before the election
or something? It was that week. He came out and said that he talked about the Hillary email investigation, and many, including Hillary, felt that that turned the election in Trump's favor. Well, now the inspector general has concluded that while there was no partisan bias, the conclusion was that he acted inappropriately, violated FBI procedure.
Bad judgment,
all those things. Comey has come out and said, okay, I don't disagree with it. You know, Trump has obviously tweeted right away on it and has said that this completely exonerates him in the Russia collusion probe by showing that there was bias in the FBI. One of the key parts of the report was that this Peter Strzok, who's one of the high-level members of the FBI, who was also in the Mueller probe, was texting his relation, his partner, Lisa Page, and said that we can't allow this election to happen. We're going to stop it. So many have felt that that is an example of the underlying bias against Trump, because that person ultimately was in the Mueller probe. Now, he's no longer in there. When Mueller found out about these texts, he fired him. But Trump has, of course, said that this shows bias. And you know,
But he won. And why cry over spilled milk? That's what I don't understand.
I mean, in many ways, you know, to your point, what Comey did helped Trump win the election by questioning Hillary's judgment in the email scandal. So, but, you know, Trump is not, you know, is putting a spin on it, of course.
Can you think of a guy that's done a better job of making himself an enemy of both the Republicans and the Democrats than Comey?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Comey was, before this report was released, Comey was thought to be one of the key witnesses in the obstruction case that Mueller might bring against Trump. Because, you know, right now there is no evidence. We don't know, but Trump is saying there's no evidence of collusion. But at the very least, many are saying that Mueller might show evidence of obstruction by Trump.
Right.
If Comey is your chief witness for obstruction, I think you're in real trouble, because he has no credibility anymore.
No. All right, let's talk about the legal battles going on over at Wrigley Field. A little closer to home.
Yeah, they're pretty much done. The Supreme Court last week decided to, with uphold the lower court's ruling, which declined to get into the dispute between the Cubs rooftop owners and Wrigley Field. If you recall, this has been going on for like 15 years. The Cubs had put up the screens initially, and then they put up the right field scoreboard.
And it allegedly obstructed the view of those rooftops
that
had been there.
Exactly. The Ricketts family ended up buying all but two of the rooftops, and those two remaining rooftop owners decided to sue the Cubs, not for putting up the billboard or putting up the screen, but for violating an agreement between the club and the rooftop owners.
An unwritten agreement, right?
Oh, it was a written agreement.
It
was the initial lawsuit ended up in the settlement agreement where the Cubs would allow the rooftops to continue in exchange for a percentage of revenue. What the rooftop owners said was that putting up this right field scoreboard, which they did in 2015, violated the terms of this written agreement. The Cubs said, actually, if you read the agreement, it says that if you get proper authorization by the government, then you could put up and do any alterations you want. And that was the key to the dispute. The rooftop owner said that that wasn't consistent with the agreement. The court said it was, and the Supreme Court declined to handle it. So that case is really now over.
But, Rich, couldn't you, if you were the Cubs, couldn't you make the argument, and maybe they did, that they're providing the entertainment without them? The people across the street, there's nothing to see.
No question.
Can you just make that argument?
For sure. And that's what the Cubs did. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the Cubs were providing the content that the rooftop owners were using.
Yeah.
Without that content, there'd be nothing to see. That's why eventually the case was settled in exchange for this percentage of revenue. The Cubs said you can continue to operate as long as you give us a piece of the action, which was a fine agreement, which was working great until in 2015, the Cubs decided to further obstruct the view by putting up the right field scoreboard. And these two clubs said, well, that violates our agreement. The Cubs said it doesn't because we're allowed to alter it as long as we follow certain rules.
Yeah.
Supreme Court agreed.
Okay.
Or
right.
Didn't agree, but declined to take the case.
Can I ask you, this wasn't on your list of things to discuss, but I'm very curious about this. This mixes law with show business. When you have performers who have done things that have hurt their career and the careers of people around them, like Roseanne Barr or Bill Cosby, let's say you're a technician who works on Roseanne's show, and you think to yourself, well, I've locked into a job for the next 3, 4, or 5 years, I'm coasting now, and then she does something that alters your work situation. People have lost their jobs because of things she has said, or Bill Cosby. Could you get yourself an attorney and fix that in court if you wanted to?
Well, the good news is for me and for my peers that you can hire an attorney, of course, to do
anything.
The success of that would probably be limited because it depends on your contract, right? I mean, if you have a contract that is like a pay or play contract that says that you get to recover regardless, then
I don't think the crew
would
have that.
But generally,
right?
The crew doesn't have that.
The cast seem to, but the crew not.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the extent of your contract. But yeah, I mean, you know, to your point, it's incredibly unfortunate that all of these other people are affected when a Roseanne, you know, is fired because of her words.
Yeah.
All right, and there's a new crime. I love documentaries. I love The Making of a Murderer, and Netflix has something that you're pretty excited about.
Yeah, just on Friday, someone turned me on to The Staircase, which is on Netflix, and, you know, I binged over the weekend. I got through about 6 hours of it. Really interesting story of a 2011 murder case where this novelist named Michael Peterson was put on trial for the death of his wife. He was charged with homicide in North Carolina. His wife ended up at the bottom of the staircase in this house that they lived in together. He said that it was the result of a fall. There's actually a couple of different theories that he's put forth, which I haven't gotten to yet because I'm trying not to read too much about it. I'm trying to watch it in real time. The state said that he bludgeoned her basically with an instrument and she ended up falling down the stairs. And it's a really fascinating look at the pretrial process and the trial, very similar to Making a Murderer. And it's really, really compelling stuff.
If you're going to commit a crime, you have to do what I saw either in Alfred Hitchcock or Twilight Zone. You have to kill someone, kill your husband with a frozen leg of lamb.
So that it melts?
And then you cook it and eat it, and
oh,
the evidence is gone.
Evidence is gone.
I don't like lamb, otherwise I'd try it, but
There was a book years ago, I can't remember the title of it, where somebody stabbed someone and killed them with an icicle because then the murder weapon just melted away.
Yeah.
That's genius.
Ingenious. When will the brilliance ever end? But yeah, I mean, it's a really great look at a lot of criminal procedure stuff that you don't really see on the NCIs and, yeah, and Law and Order. You know, real life things.
And this is based on a case from when? How long
2011
ago?
2011 was was the trial, when the trial began.
Yeah.
I think she died sometime in the mid-2000s.
2005.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called The Staircase, and it's on Netflix.
I will be watching that.
All right. Thank you for telling us about that. That's Rich Lankoff, attorney over at Bryce Downey & Lankoff, LLC. And if people want to hear Legal Face-Off, the podcast, just go to WGN Plus, and it's all right there, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
All right. A little bit of a break, and then some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Who wants to go to a White Sox game? I was going to go over the weekend for Father's Day. I have to be honest with you, it was way too hot.
Oh.
It was way too hot. But how about a family four-pack of tickets to the Chicago White Sox versus the Oakland Athletics, Billy, on Saturday, June 23rd at 1:10 p.m. What number, caller?
Caller 8.
312-981-7200. Caller number 8, Jazzy. You keep listening for that sounder that we just played. It's your cue to call in to win seats to the Sox all regular season long. Caller 8, 312-981-7200. A family four-pack of tickets. The Chicago White Sox and the Oakland A's. I was watching the game yesterday, and Hawk Harrelson does a few games, not many.
Right.
You know who was in the booth with him all day?
No, who was this?
The Big Hurt.
Oh, that's a good matchup, Frank Thomas.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Although there's so much mutual love between the two of those that really all day they kept loving on each other.
Oh,
and
that's
Frank
all right.
Thanked Hawk for giving him that nickname, the Big Hurt. He goes, "No one calls me Frank anymore. They just call me the Big Hurt."
It really is one of baseball's greatest nicknames.
Isn't
he did a nice job with it. Yeah.
Mercy.
Yeah. Sometimes I didn't understand the nicknames. Like, remember the White Sox had Lance Johnson, the center fielder? And his nickname was One Dog, and I still don't know why. I don't know what brought that on.
Because he only had one dog.
Oh, maybe that would make perfect sense. Right. Right.
And then as I was going to get beer, I listened to the WGN radio version with Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson.
Yeah.
And they were having a fun old time in the heat yesterday.
Yeah.
It really was hot. I'm not complaining. I'm really not.
Uh-huh.
I'm just telling you, the problem with Chicago is it goes from leaving your heat on, your furnace, to central air.
That's pretty extreme.
There's
quick.
No gradual.
Right.
We need to acclimate.
Yeah. We don't have any of that here.
No. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Bob from Chicago. He is going to see the White Sox play the Oakland A's Saturday, June 23rd. It's a 1:10 game, and he got a family four-pack. Listeners, keep listening for that sounder, and we will give you seats to the Sox all regular season long.
Just to kind of sum everything up, Lance Johnson only had the one dog, and though that brought on the nickname One Dog. I didn't know that.
Maybe he hit the first pitch all the time?
Mm.
That's a stretch. That's a stretch.
I don't know if that's true. I think your first answer might be your best answer. I think he probably did at some point have a dog, just the one of them. So.
And please explain to me the Big Hurt. He's
put the hurt
you.
On his opponents
all
in
right.
a big way. You know, he swung a mean bat, and the ball went very far, and then the Big Hurt. And you know, Wendy, because you were in the room when I asked him his permission, I am now, thanks to Frank Thomas, I can now have the nickname the medium-sized hurt.
Right.
What an honor.
I think you should go with Teeny Hurt.
The Teeny Hurt. That doesn't sound dangerous at all.
Can I tell you something about Frank Thomas?
Yeah.
This guy was a phenom and an amazing player for the Chicago
From
White
day
Sox.
Day one.
But he is so approachable and personable now. Where was that when he was playing?
I don't know what happened. He really didn't. He was very standoffish.
Captain. Yeah.
Yeah. And then once his playing days were over, it was like a switch turned on.
I know.
He was everybody's friend, and he's such a nice man.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
I think I have to tell you. Is this now? No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You'll tell us something later? You
yes.
promise? Oh, I'll look forward to that. Okay. I have to ask you. You showed me something. A photograph confidentially, and I'm just curious as to what brought this on. You and your family yesterday to celebrate Father's Day journeyed out to a restaurant called, what again is this restaurant called? Because I want to try this place.
Well, it's for the seafood lover and me, and it's Red Lobster.
Red Lobster.
We
I'm going to write
Red
that
Lobster.
Down. Hold on. red.
I know we could lobster. Be going to Joe's Stone Crab.
No, please.
It's different.
You got
things.
Red Lobster. You got the biscuits, the Cheddar Bay biscuits.
And they're, you know, when you're going for shrimp, they do shrimp pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you went, or your son, you needed to use the restroom.
Michael went to the bathroom.
Yeah, and then in the bathroom, he saw something that you photographed and showed me, and this is very curious.
Well, this was not for air.
Oh, you didn't say that. I didn't hear you say that.
I didn't say it, but
you just assumed I
was. It's just silly. There was a lot of crazy things going on at Red Lobster yesterday.
Well, it was Father's Day.
It was.
Yeah, anything can happen.
And something did happen that was weird. I think this was in the hallway leading to the men's room. Michael saw a sock.
A single sock.
A white sock. Not a player.
Frank Thomas.
It was just
not the Big Hurt.
I believe it was. I don't know what they're called. It wasn't an anklet. It was a no show.
Oh, so you're wearing socks, but it gives the look that you're not wearing socks.
Right.
So I guess
you could lose it and not know that it came out.
No, they don't just fall right off.
I know.
They
I don't...
still. You have to work hard for a sock to just fall off in the middle of a thing, you know, whoever was eating dinner there, you don't think they knew that they lost a sock? What happened?
I don't know the answer. That's why I wasn't going to bring it up. But Michael took a picture of it on the floor and labeled it on his Instagram, Sock Lobster.
That's very funny. You know, for years, and I'm sure you've seen this too, if you drive around, you see this enough, you'll be driving down a street and there'll just be a shoe.
Always one.
Always one. And you say, was a guy driving and he just got tired of one of his shoes and he goes, I don't need this anymore, and just hurls it out the window? What would have to happen where you would decide with either one shoe or one sock, enough is enough. I don't need this.
I have two answers for that. I don't know if either one makes sense.
Why?
When you are the passenger, sometimes you put your feet out the window.
Which always looks good, by the way, to other cars.
Who cares
always
what it looks like?
Nice.
I mean, I don't do it but I did when I was younger.
Grandma's feet need some air. That's great.
Grandmas don't do it. They can't lift their legs up that high.
I had a very dexterous grandmother, Wendy, and I'm offended by that.
So I feel like the wind, you know how you put your hand out there and it blows your hand? I think the wind blows the shoe off.
Isn't that crazy? You've seen it, though, right? You go, like, if that happened to me, I'd pull over and I'd get it. I would. I can't lose a shoe or a sock.
Or it's in the back of your pickup truck.
Yeah.
Because you went and worked out, and then you had to go back to work, so you just threw it back there.
Maybe.
That's the other.
Maybe. But in your scenario yesterday, a man is it was it a
like
man's sock or a woman's sock?
I got to be honest with you. Looking at it, it looks pretty small, so perhaps it is
a
kid's sock who was maybe sitting in a stroller or being carried by dad, and it
just
fell off.
Decided.
No, it fell off. I don't know.
It just fell off? He didn't have shoes on? Like a shoe.
I don't know the
part of the shoe's
story.
Job is to prevent socks from just falling off. That's why they invented shoes.
To prevent sock fall off.
Yeah. Everyone knows that.
I don't know, but I am so with you on seeing the one shoe. However,
forever.
Lately, and I don't know if it's because of social media or what, but lately, and it's not. Lately, I see a shoe. And then about 50 feet later, I see the other shoe.
Oh, but I look at that as progress.
Yes.
Right? Because you can't do anything with one. You might as well get rid of the ego. Well, one fell off. I don't need this one anymore. And toss it. That makes that makes more sense than one coming off.
I guess. And then the weirdest thing, I've been walking the new puppy Kona around the block, and there's a pair of shoes, just sitting by someone's fence. They look like bowling shoes. And I don't know why the people who live there don't throw them out. I don't know if they're leaving them there thinking someone lost them and they're going to
maybe they'll come back.
It's been 3 weeks.
What's the statute of limitation? Like, when do you go, well, that guy's never coming back?
I don't know, but I you know what? If they're there today, I'm going to pick
them
up
yours.
And throw them out. I don't want...
You can keep those.
You don't wear other people's shoes because everybody walks funny and differently.
Right, that's true.
That was the big thing that my mom always said because I would...
Yeah.
I would swap shoes with friends. Like some people would switch lunches. I always liked other people's shoes better than mine. So I'd say, hey, let's flip flop. And my mom would say, that's really not a good thing because people walk differently.
She's right. Your mom is right.
But if you pronate or resonate, I don't know what the other one is.
Yeah.
You wear some of the heels and you can really screw up your gait.
Your mom. Oh, that. Wow. Highfalutin. That's well said, Wendy.
We have maybe an answer. I'm not really sure, but this is our first phone call.
Oh.
Rich has called us. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Rich, what do you know about this? This wasn't your sock, you know, was it?
No, but possibly it could have been stuck in somebody's pant leg coming out of the dryer. And they didn't know it was falling out.
Oh, my God.
Because I've had that happen. Had that happen in my living room. You know, put on my jeans or something and find a sock in there.
That's a bonus.
Yeah. What a happy day that must have been.
Yeah, an extra sock. You know, now I can make up the ones that were eaten by the dryer.
It's better than winning the lottery, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It is, absolutely.
In the shoes along the highway, if you remember, I'm 63 years old and I was in the Army for 25 years, but back in the 60s and 70s, there was always like dress shoes along the highway. Did you ever notice that when you were taking a trip?
Why was that?
Oh, guys like me getting out of the Army, we're never going to wear them uncomfortable shoes again and toss them out the window on the way home.
Oh, that makes sense. Wow, you have solved many mysteries for us today.
Yeah. I drive a truck, so I got hours and hours just to have my mind go nuts.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yes.
Thankfully for us, you do that. We appreciate it. Thanks for problem solving, Rich.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. Have a good day and enjoy the new studio.
Thank you, sir. It's a nice place. Thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, Rich. You. Drive safely. And Gary has something for us as well. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I always had the theory that there is an argument in the car. The passenger takes off their shoe, throws it at the driver. The driver ducks. It goes out the window. And then the passenger says, well, go back and get my shoe. And the driver goes, no, you threw it at me.
Right.
I like that answer.
In a fit of rage. I like that. Brilliant. Very brilliant.
I think that's just the way it goes.
All right. Thank you.
And you guys remember?
Yeah.
Put the kind back in humankind.
Put the kind back in humankind. All right. Thank you.
I like to say put the Richard kind back in humankind.
Oh, what a nice tribute. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice tribute,
Chicago
Wendy.
Chicago Zone.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We were just talking about strange phenomena that you experienced or your son experienced over the weekend of just finding a single sock all by itself there in a restaurant.
It
kind of a sad story, isn't it? It makes me sad. It got split up from the rest of its laundry family. Here's another strange clothing story. Every Monday, I like to find strange clothing stories, Wendy, and share them with you and the listeners.
Well, you know, now that Mr. Blackwell is no longer with us.
Somebody has to carry on the tradition.
You're the epitome of fashion.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Now, here's the story. Now, as I read it to you, I want you to pay attention to several things. Number one, the timeliness in the reporting of this story. A British man who believed that he was wearing a stab-proof vest.
Uh-oh. Right there.
Died last summer after he took a knife to his own chest. First of all, if this happened last summer, like I said, the timeliness of the story, they're reporting on it today. This came out today. This is online today. And yet it took place last summer. The second question I throw out selfishly, because I can't figure it out, is when purchasing a vest, who would ask the question? And now, this vest I'm buying, this is, I'm guessing, I'm hoping a stab-free vest, isn't it?
Well, perhaps.
What has to happen to you where that's a concern? What job do you have where you go, I get stabbed a lot and I need a vest?
Maybe he was one of those knights at those medieval times. Seriously, because, you know, an epée or a sword, sword, if you will, will come at you.
A lance.
Could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a chain link garment that would prevent a knife from penetrating you. So.
Oh, maybe. So you're going to go with he worked at a King Richard's fair. That's your guess.
Maybe that king, but a medieval times type of thing.
Now, I did say a British man. This story takes place in England.
Hello.
So maybe that's more common in England than it is here.
I don't know. Maybe he was a palace guard.
Oh, all right. All bets are off.
Why are you so close-minded?
I guess I am close-minded. I can't imagine a situation where when purchasing a vest, you have to say to the salesperson, can I get this in writing that this is a stab-free vest? Because I get stabbed a lot. I love vests.
They're very stylish.
They're stylish. I hate having my sleeves covered up. Right. I want people to see my sleeves, so I need a vest. But I want to make sure that the vest I purchase from you is a stab-free vest. I get stabbed all the time, so I want to make sure that this vest will ensure some level of safety.
Well, if they said it was stab-free and it wasn't, doesn't he have a lawsuit?
He has a definite lawsuit.
The estate can sue this?
Yeah.
Where do you get that stab-free vest?
There's places.
Corvettes?
Well, they don't have Corvettes in England, Wendy. You go to you go to Harrods. They have a whole section of stab-free vests at Harrods. Jordan Easton, age 22, of Thornaby, of course, reportedly was in a friend's kitchen on August 23rd of 2017. That is roughly a year ago. Why? This is news that needs to be reported on immediately. You don't hold this back for 10 months.
Maybe he just died.
You're responsible. You think, oh, maybe he lingered for almost a year? Maybe. All right, so he was reportedly in a friend's kitchen on August 23rd, 2017, when he stabbed himself. Interesting twist.
Right, you said that at the beginning.
I wasn't paying attention. While in the kitchen, he took hold of a knife to demonstrate that it was stab-proof and sadly realized it wasn't the case. This according to Assistant Coroner Karen Welsh.
That's when you go, like, not for your major organs. Maybe you just do it on the side and not quite so hard.
Oh, yeah,
just
yeah.
To pre-test it a little bit before you do the big...
Before the, right. What leads to that discussion? That's a great vest, Jordan. Is it stab-free? Oh, yeah, I could stab myself 1,000 times with this. I wouldn't feel it. Well, let's see. One, a two, three. Easton reportedly was rushed to the hospital where he died. It does not say if that was an immediate or
it sounds
if it took
immediate.
10 months. It does sound immediate, doesn't it? The newspaper reported that while his injuries were self-inflicted, there was no evidence that proved that Easton purposely tried to harm himself. I don't know. You start making the boast, you got a stab-free vest.
Well, he thought it was stab-free.
He thought it was. The man's mother, Allison Price, said in court that Easton stabbing himself was out of character and that she couldn't absorb it. It would be out of character. If your son is constantly stabbing himself, you put him on some sort of a watch, don't you?
Or give him some kind of a
give
watch.
Give him a watch, right. 20th anniversary of not stabbing yourself watch. Friends described Easton, who had just turned 22 5 days earlier, as a one-of-a-kind kid. I agree.
Could have said that.
Yeah. And he had a golden heart.
Well, that's what he was trying to stab, and if it was really golden, it wouldn't have gone in.
Right. That's so true.
He had a stab-free heart.
That sounds like a movie on Lifetime.
It does.
Doesn't it? Easton's death was ruled a misadventure. I didn't know that was a thing.
That's how you're going to go.
I'll tell you what. If that's the case, I'd be proud of that. I didn't know that was an option, that you could die from misadventure.
Yours might be death by mischief. Would you like that?
I'm also on board with that. Easton's death ruled a misadventure, which Wells said meant that the victim died from consequences that were not intended. It seems that was the situation with Jordan, said the assistant coroner, Karen Welsh. Death by misadventure.
Well, that's quite sad,
Sign me
though.
Up. It's a very sad story.
Although you mentioned Gordon Lightfoot. Can we give away a pair of tickets?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We have a pair right now. Limited amount. This may be our last pair of tickets. Gordon Lightfoot live in action. The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down.
Yeah.
To the lake that they call...
Gitchagumi.
It's the funniest lyric ever.
Yep.
Sunday, September 16th, this is all happening at the Copernicus Center. If you'd like to go, let's do the fifth caller right now, 312-981-7200. You can hear the hits, like If You Could Read My Mind, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and Gordon Lightfoot will be giving his own personal anecdotes and stories. I bet this is going to be a great show.
Yeah.
You can get reserved tickets at CopernicusTickets.com or be the fifth caller right now, 312-981-7200. A pair of tickets to see Gordon Lightfoot live in action on Sunday, September 16th at the Copernicus Center.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
And the greatest father in all the land. Did you have a great Father's Day, Eric Zorn?
Oh, of course I did.
You're the greatest father in all the land. It goes without saying.
It's the first time I've heard this song from this altitude.
Isn't that?
And it's much better up here, I have to say. Very pleasant up here. You guys your new studios? You've probably been talking about it all morning. But
no, we haven't really, because the listeners don't care.
Oh, they do.
Not really.
They have a vision. They have a vision in their mind's eye view at street level.
At the old place. Well, didn't the listeners also move? Or just us? I assume the listeners also
moved about two blocks south. That's how
and higher up.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful up here. You should send out photos and stuff.
It's very, very nice up here.
Did you have a good Father's Day?
Yeah, though? It was great.
What did you think of Mary Schmeek's column yesterday where she said we should get rid of Mother's Day and Father's Day and have it be Parents' Day?
Oh, there's isn't that interesting?
So many, you know, fluid definitions, and these both these days tend to emphasize gender stereotypes.
Yeah.
And you know, my dad died when I was 10, so on Father's Day, I used to give my mom a card to thank her for being both a mother and a father to me. But I like the Parents' Day.
I do, too. I mean, the one thing, first of all, about Father's Day, I feel like as a father, I get fussed over a lot.
Do you? Yeah.
I do.
You do?
I feel like appreciated, yeah.
You get fussed over?
Appreciated, yeah,
I do. What year is this?
No, I'm not, I mean...
I don't know what you mean.
Let me put it a different way.
You get that?
I feel like
poor Jimmy Mack.
He doesn't get that.
In the course of day in, day out life,
yeah.
I feel like I get enough affirmation for being a father. And that, so I don't need this day where they make a big deal about it. I don't feel like, oh, I'm not appreciated.
But you don't want to do away with it, as Mary Schmeek has suggested. You enjoy it for what it is.
You combine it.
But I guess it's one of the things where I guess I just don't feel like I need this extra day of being recognized. You know, the thing about every day is Children's Day.
Right.
That's a load of crap.
You don't think every day is Kids' Day?
Well,
kids get to do... The argument is a kid would always say, how come there's Mother's Day and Father's Day, but we don't get a Kids' Day? And then every adult says the same thing. Every day is Kids' Day.
Every day is Children's Day. Yeah. Exactly. Well, but people don't take their dads out for brunch on Father's Day, do they? Because they let the fathers... I was explaining to Johanna yesterday, the reason the U.S. Open golf tournament is on, because this is the stereotype of dads. They like to throw themselves
sit around
in front
and
of the
watch golf.
And watch golf, like I did.
Yeah.
No, I think most people like to go out to brunch or some kind of restaurant.
On Father's Day?
Bill?
No.
We went out to dinner.
But you always go out to dinner.
We go out to dinner every day.
But this was a special one.
And Wendy, you already know this because I've told you this before. Whenever it's my birthday or Father's Day, my daughters make a speech and I burst into tears. Every single time. My wife even said, because yesterday it took a minute six, she timed it, and she came the closest.
Is it a pool. Speech like about like Mexican exports, like a speech they would be given to their social studies class?
Embargoes and stuff like that. Yeah.
If you look at the map of the rainforest.
No, they both pull out what I mean to them and how lucky they are, and I just burst into tears every single time.
Do your kids do that? Because my kids don't do that.
I got a text from Alex. It says, Happy Father's Day. Which was nice, I guess. You know,
at least they remembered.
They remembered
that was nice.
Or they were prompted. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Either way.
I don't know. We're not a speech. I'm going to have to put that on the
the
agenda for next year. Yeah, we're having dinner, and your speeches will be after. Your 10 minutes will be fine.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that. Yeah. Really, a speech?
Yeah.
Are they different every year? Do they recycle it?
No,
you don't do that many great things for them to be different every year.
I think they're talking about somebody other than me.
Are they ghostwritten? Are you sure that this is right?
They are.
Like, God, I was going to give you a speech, but it didn't arrive in time.
All right.
Or one of those things like when you're a college kid, you can order like a term paper.
Right.
It's like that.
Yes.
Well, I think they get a Mad Lib sheet. They just fill in various facts about me. All right. I know this is an awkward transition because it is such a tragic story. But can we talk a little about what's going on with the kids at the border? Because, boy, is this gut-wrenching.
How they're being snatched away from their families.
And put in essentially cages.
Yeah, this is just, I think this is the example of Donald Trump trying to whip up his base. And there's a certain percentage of people who are really in favor of this. And essentially what they're doing is...
How can you be in favor of this?
What the idea is, and most of the Trump administration is open about this. So certainly Steve Bannon, who's not officially part of the administration, but was sort of speaks for them still in a way. He was on ABC This Week yesterday. And was saying that this is basically, you know, this is the price that you pay when you try to bring your children across the border. And we want to enforce our laws, and this is the consequence of that. And President Trump has clearly made it the case that if the Democrats are willing to give him money to build the border wall, if they're willing to pass some sort of comprehensive immigration policy that gives him $25 billion or more to build this wall that he wants to build, then he will rescind this policy. And it is not, he keeps saying that it's his Democrats have a law, this is the Democrats' fault. That is not true.
There is no law.
And it's very interesting to see that a lot of objective news stories, places like the Associated Press, where they write straight news stories, say that this is just not true. It's not like a matter of opinion. This was a policy that they instituted.
Yeah.
And they're separating children, sometimes very small children. There's a guy who killed himself in his holding cell because he had been separated from his children. This is horrific.
There was a young person who had to change the diapers of another child because no one in this cage knew how to do it, and there was no parent to do it.
Yeah. I mean, and it's
unacceptable.
So essentially, they are holding these kids hostage to the border wall.
And then who gets them?
Well, ultimately, one hopes they'll be reunited with their parents at some point, maybe as they shove them back across the border. I'm not sure, but this is something that, you know, people keep saying online. You'll see people saying, this is not America. This is not America.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it has become America. This is who we are now. This is what this administration, this is how we behave.
But it can't be, this is who we are. Because, I mean, I just can't imagine anyone really thinking this is a great idea.
I can't either. I can't imagine
even Donald Trump.
What this looks like. Well, Trump is talking out of both sides of his mouth on this, as usual. I mean, as he often does on issues, where he'll say, this is horrible, I don't want this to happen, and he'll say, if the Democrats only do this, then it won't happen anymore, trying to put some judo on it. But the truth is that this is a decision that Jeff Sessions made, and Stephen Miller, and all these people made this decision. They said it wasn't hard to make, and that they are using it for leverage. This is a deterrent. And they had the nerve to invoke the Bible, saying that the Bible says we should obey the laws of man.
What you just said is the worst part of this, is that Jeff Sessions said that this was a decision that was not hard to make. How can you, first of all, make this decision and then come out and say, no, this was easy to do,
I think it was Miller who said the easy thing, but essentially this seems to be their point, which is that this was something where they just said, we are going to enforce the letter of this law and with this policy. And it would take one phone call or a one-page document signed by Trump to stop it.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the policy before. They weren't separating families like this before.
Yeah.
And they're doing it to gain leverage. They're doing it because they think that this will dramatize the problem. This is something that will get people excited and will get people who are really opposed to immigration really fired up. I think it's a huge political miscalculation. I think this is one of the great political blunders of our time.
So who comes up with the strategy of, this isn't going over quite as well as we had hoped, we better blame Democrats for this? Whose strategy is that?
Oh, that's something they've been doing all along. That was the thing with DACA, you know, the deferred action for childhood arrivals, the Dreamers, so-called, where they were saying, well, the Democrats were trying to figure out a pathway to citizenship for these kids, and then they would turn around and blame the Democrats for not voting on a bill that had all kinds of things in it the Democrats didn't want that would also have allowed for a better path to citizenship for DACA. So they're trying to take this. They'll blame it on the Democrats. You're not solving this problem because you're not voting on this larger bill that contains a lot of poison pills in it. So that's the strategy. I think they realize that there are going to be people who are upset about this.
Yeah.
But they're hoping that those people will take out their anger on the Democrats. I think that's a real political miscalculation. That is not part of the Democratic brand. You're not going to be able to convince people that Democrats are in favor of this or that they like it. This is what they want.
Yeah.
When you've got people like Jeff Sessions and Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and all these people coming out and defending this and saying this is necessary to enforce our laws, you're reinforcing the fact that this is part of the Republican strategy.
Right.
And it has to stop. Something has to happen this week. And I'm thinking that maybe as early as tomorrow there's going to be some meetings with congressional leaders and Trump, and he's going to figure out a way out of this.
All right.
He has to, because
we'll see what happens.
This can't continue.
That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll come back with more discussion next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Eric, you recently wrote something that's getting a lot of play, and that has to do with milk. What happened with the milk?
Hang on. There you go.
This is really... Let's do this again. So right. When we actually do it on the air,
yeah, it'll
right.
be clean.
No, this is something that I write about serious issues all the time. I wrote about the death penalty case last week. And I posted this on Facebook and then did a little column item on it. And this got like hundreds of responses.
Mm-hmm.
It's this. You go to the grocery store, I assume everywhere in the Chicago area, the milk comes in a milk in a little gallon jug
mm-hmm.
with a handle on
mm-hmm.
it. And they sometimes ask you, do you want the milk in a bag? And I always say yes, of course.
I always say no.
You'll say no. Well, here we go. This is the great debate. And can we take the next hour to do this debate? But sometimes they don't even ask. They just put the milk in your cart and don't even ask. They put it in there. And my argument is that it is much easier to carry milk in a bag.
Yeah.
And especially if you bring your own bag, they should automatically assume that you've got space in your bag. It should be in a bag. It's easy. Even if it's just the jug in a bag.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heavy. I
sure
allow for that.
Could break through the bag. You have to double bag it.
But the little handle is not good for carrying. It's good for pouring. It's not good for carrying.
Oh.
It's got the little plastic ridge that can like hurt your hand. And,
yeah, right.
And if you're going to carry bags into the house, which we all must do at some point, you can carry a bag. You know, if you're on your hand, you can carry a milk bag and a bag of some vegetables in it. And
you can put it over your wrist. That's what the thing is.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, and so you can carry a lot more. And so I thought, like, why is the default? I mean, it's okay if people don't want it. I don't have a problem if Wendy is, like, weird and doesn't want to have her milk in a bag.
Well,
that's
can
okay.
I tell
doesn't
you why I
me.
Don't want it in a bag? Because they make these bags so flimsy now that unless they double bag it, and even when they do, it's not strong enough to hold the milk.
Well, if they double bag it, it is. If they single bag it, you can have a little accident. That's true.
Yeah.
I've never had a problem with a double bag. And in Chicago, there's the additional issue of if you ask for a bag, you have to pay 7 cents.
Sure.
I always bring my own bag, so that's not a problem. But the reaction to this was what really surprised me. First of all, the people who ripped me for being a weakling.
Oh, no,
no,
really?
No,
come
they
on.
They ripped me for drinking milk.
I love milk.
Like, why?
Skim
you're
or 1%, 2%?
You're a grown-up, 2%. You're a grown-up. You should not be
it does a body
milk.
Good, Eric.
It does a body good. You're right. Got milk, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. And
I'm
then,
not slamming
and,
you,
and
though.
They ripped me for not using plastic instead of glass. You know, I mean, it's like I was just a whipping boy for everybody. But this is, I thought this was like, the thing that bothered me is that it's the default, the assumption that the grocery store's bag is that you don't want it in a bag.
Oh.
If the assumption was that you could say, like, oh, don't put it, if, like Wendy could say, no, don't put it in a bag. It's
sometimes I do. It just, I go back and forth. I don't have a fixed setting.
But I got to say, what really surprised me was just the vehemence and the volume.
People were angry
at
you.
Response to this, like, I wrote a piece about the mayor and the sex scandal in the schools last week. I wrote a piece about a court case I've been following having to do with one of the most famous murder cases. I'm like, 5-10 responses, you know.
But this
literally 200 responses. People were like arguing with me, wanting to, you know, take me out. So it is fascinating to me sometimes how, and I think part of it is that maybe people are just so overwhelmed with like terrible news,
terrible
stories coming out. Now this is something that we can really argue about, and it makes no difference at all.
Tomorrow, ask about laundry detergent because it's the same thing. Do you want it in a bag or not?
Of course, you want it in a bag.
Why it has a handle?
But that's a pouring handle, you're saying.
It's a pouring handle. It's all you can carry with one hand. Is that you can't carry anything else. If you're going to carry that laundry detergent in one hand, that hand is used up. You can't put
bags on. It's
going to
break the bag.
Yeah.
Well, it will break the bag, but that's why you need to double bag it.
What about, Eric, when they say, and would you like your eggs in a carton, sir, or just separate?
I'll juggle them home.
Just throw them in the bottom of the
wherever.
I just want to tell you if you're having like a lull at a dinner party sometime soon.
Yeah.
Sitting around like, what are we going to talk about? Because you want to stay away from politics sometimes.
Yeah.
Say, you know, there's this jerk at the Tribune. You know.
But when you think about it, if you're double bagging a carton of milk, so in some places that's an extra. It's 14 cents, and I know people go, well, that's not a big deal. But over the course of a year. That adds up pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It does add up, and it's taken me almost 2 years to get so I always remember. Now I live in the city, and you have to remember to bring your own bag.
How often do you wash it? And
wash
do you
it?
Put? See
you
what
ever
I'm
wash
saying?
It? You never wash it, do you?
That's why I won't use it because I'm too lazy to wash it. And what if you have raw chicken in there or something? You got to wash it. It's gross.
Yeah.
And I don't like being in behind someone at the checkout that these big, gross, dirty bags that have been in their soccer mom trunks are now on the conveyor belt.
Yeah. Wendy has really got this down.
Sure.
You know, this probably,
it's hard to make him switch.
This probably explains the outbreaks of food poisoning. It's all the raw chicken juice that's getting into
that
our
bread. That happens about 6 or 7 times a year, doesn't it?
I've just sort of attributed it to bad luck, but now I know why. You could throw your... I don't... You know, that's you're asking a good question. I don't think we've ever washed our totes.
Never?
I don't think so. They don't look dirty, but... those chicken viruses, they are invisible. So.
Right, absolutely.
And the romaine lettuce, come on, that caused an outbreak of things.
That's true, but that Yeah, but so you can just take the bags and throw them in with your other laundry, right?
Yeah.
So you could.
I'd do
you
it
could.
With towels.
I could. Yeah. I could do this. Then. Yep. I suppose it could happen.
Possible.
Hey, Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, Steve Bertrand's got the Winter's Business Lunch.
When Steve Bertrand walks in, that's when I walk.
It's time to leave. All right. Thank you, Eric, for being here.
Nice to see you guys.
We'll check in with Steve next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.